U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Hey, welcome to Friday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Skyline Studio. Let's say it is the weekend as we get set for mid-fall weekend, I guess, here in the city of Chicago. You heard me say that a week from tomorrow, the Hallmark Channel is going to start their countdown to Christmas. It's the 10th year for this, where they show these Christmas movies. I think there's going to be 24 new ones this year, and you either love them or you hate them. We're going to talk to the CEO about it because I think it is the biggest part of their year, huge business for them, and they're just about to get running. They're actually going to have like a Christmas con, I think, in New Jersey, sort of similar to Comic-Con. That's coming up a little bit later. A.D. Quigg from Crane Chicago Business will join us, too. The city council passed the zoning ordinance for the marijuana dispensaries or stores in the city, but a group of African-American aldermen still wanting to push the sales back from January 1st to July 1st. So we'll talk to A.D. about that. But first, let's go to your house. Are you an employee and your wife or your husband has a career as well? That sometimes can be tough. In fact, I read 60% of couples in the U.S. are dual career couples. That is something that Jennifer Petrilieri knows about. She's the author of a book, Couples That Work, How Dual Career Couples Can Thrive in Love and in Work. And she joins us on a phone line now. Jennifer, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So, you know, my wife and I both have careers, and we work together. I leave my clothes on the floor, and she picks them up.
Well, I'll talk to her about that, right?
but that's what we think about, right, when we generally have two career couples, how they're going to split up the household chores. But you argue in the book and in your research that that's really not really getting to the crux of it. That's not really going to make us happier.
Absolutely. And what I found very strongly in my research is couples can spend all the time they want deciding how to split the chores, sync their calendars, and it's really not going to get to the crux of the issue, because the crux of the issue is really about the principles of our relationship. What do we want out of life? How do our two careers fit together? How are we going to support each other, you know, follow our dreams, whether that's a career dream and also whether that's a personal dream?
Well,
and unless couples have...
So if we do then spend just our time worrying about if it's Mondays, I take the garbage out, Tuesdays, Sharon does the laundry, we're actually making ourselves less happy?
In many ways, yes, because what can happen very often is although we have those practical aspects sorted, we drift in life. And very often this is where the regrets can come up, the resentment, that, you know, you got a shot at your career and I didn't get a shot at mine. So unless we talk about that stuff as well, really, couples go off the rails eventually, even if they have a perfect 50-50 split of the housework.
All right, so you have three areas that people should talk about. And if you're not given to conversations like this, it could be difficult. But first is sit down and talk about things that really matter, which means probably not your parking spots at work or how difficult it is to get lunch in the afternoon.
No, it's really about more long-term things. And that might be a career goal that matters to you. It might be around having enough time to do something in the community. It might be financial stability. Those things that are the yardsticks by which we're going to measure our lives. Because at the end of the day, these are the things which we look at and say, did I reach that? And if so, am I happy or not? So that's the first area.
Well, why is it important to say that out loud to your spouse? Why do those need to be shared?
Need to completely overlap, but it's really important we understand what our partner is shooting for, because what often happens in couples is we think we're being supportive, but we're actually supporting something that's important to us but is not necessarily important to them. So it's about having this clarity. It's not that you agree on everything. In fact, that's very unusual for a couple to agree on every single point. That's not what we're aiming for here.
Is this you're talking about, we talk about hobbies, things like that are important to people, and understanding those as well?
Holistically, so it's both career, it's also investment in the family, right? What does a good family really look like for you? It's hobbies, it's friendship, it's community, it's the whole gambit of things that are important to us in our lives.
Okay, and from there we go to what we won't do, and this is interesting to me. So you might live with it, or I might live with this idea of one day transferring to the East Coast or to the West Coast or something like that. and just hold that in my head. If I don't share that and find out that that's something that my wife would never do, we could be creating trouble, right? So agree early on what you're not going to do.
Yeah, and this is what I think of as, what are the lines you're not going to cross? It might be location. It might be working hours. How many hours a week do you need to work for it to really start badly impacting your wife? For people with work travel, which is a lot of us these days, how much work travel is too much to bear for the family? Once we know these lines, it's really clear when we've crossed them. But if we're not clear about them, what can happen is the thin end of the wedge. You know, we start and we get a little bit worse and a little bit worse, and suddenly we're way over where we want to be. So having this clarity is vital.
What does it mean to talk about your fears and to share your fears?
Yeah, this is perhaps a little bit more difficult to talk about, and many couples don't do this regularly. But all of us have some fundamental concerns about our relationships or careers. It might be a concern about growing apart over time. It might be a concern about the role, you know, each other's wider family has in our lives. It might be a concern about having our career derailed. And what I found in my research was when couples talked about these, they could manage them really well because they could be very sensitive to each other's worries. But if I don't know what you're worried about, right, I can very often step on your hot buttons completely unwittingly and upset you, not purposely, but just because I don't understand that's something you're worried about.
Okay, so if we're going to take this strategy, do we have like a Thursday night sit down where we talk about the three big things, or how does this work?
About baking in that habit into your relationship. It's not something to discuss tonight and then forget for the next year. It doesn't have to be every night. It doesn't have to be every week. But certainly, you know, every couple of months revisiting this and really making it a habit of one of the things you talk about in your relationship. Yes.
Tell me what the attachment theory is and how that fits into all of this.
Yeah, so attachment theory, we often think of it in children, but it's really about what are the kind of healthy relationships we need to grow and develop as children and also as adults. And as adults, most of us, most important relationship for us is our partner. And what we find in this is that this kind of support we think we want from our partner is not necessarily the most helpful. So we all love it when our partner sort of tells us we're brilliant and pumps up our self-esteem, mm-hmm, which is wonderful. But it's not necessarily the most helpful support in terms of long-term growth and development, particularly when we have careers. And what I found in my research and what I write about in the book is what's really helpful instead is if couples develop what's called an attachment theory of secure base, which means, yes, there's that loving support, but there's also a real push, almost a loving kick up the ass, if I can put it that way, to say, you know, if you're not happy where you are, get out there and explore. Don't stay in the comfort zone, but, you know, really go out there, explore, experiment, and try new things. And when couples can be good at this, they really thrive over time.
Well, Jennifer Petrilieri, you've given us some very uncomfortable homework to do this weekend, so thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
The name of the book, Couples at Work, How Dual Career Couples Can Thrive in Love and in Work. Thanks, Jennifer. Be well.
Thank you.
It's 1222. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. After a check of the headlines, Bill Abbott will be here. He's the president and CEO of Crown Media Family Networks. That's the parent company of the Hallmark Channel and Hallmark Movies, and they give us all of the Christmas movies that start just a week from tomorrow. Adam Ockstein can't wait. He's the CEO of StratX and comes by when he can find nothing better to do. Adam, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to see you again.
I was a little concerned maybe you turned your back on me because you haven't been here in a while.
Yeah, I was going to retire, but, you know, decided to stick around for
and
a while.
And so, no kidding. So then I was talking to the folks from Chicago Inno a few weeks ago, and I think they had a 50 on fire list for Chicago.
And in Fuego,
and I see Adam Ockstein, StratX, because you sold the company.
We did sell the company.
So I want to get to that, but first tell me, what is StratX?
StratX is now Toast. pardon the pun.
There is no StratX, yeah.
So we sold a company called Toast, which is a modern cloud-based point-of-sale provider. Okay. We had a really nice partnership with them for a while, where our software spoke nicely to one another, and they spoke so nicely, and the customers took to it so well that they decided to acquire us.
So you would do, you did software that would help restaurants manage their workers.
Workforce. Yeah,
right. So from the restaurants that had several different locations and things like that.
Yeah, so from recruitment all the way through termination and Cobra, that whole life cycle of employment.
StratX was your baby, right?
It was my baby. Still my baby.
Is it? Well, tell me about that. Tell me about creating something and then walking it down the aisle and giving it away.
It is like a child, for sure.
Yeah.
And I always used to say we were a gangly teenager with acne, always growing into ourselves. But you know, it's a labor of love. The people you work with become your family,
mm-hmm.
and then those relationships start to foster. And then when you end up selling it someday, it becomes weird to work for the company that you once started.
Was it always your goal to build it and sell it?
I used to joke with my oldest son, who's 15, that you'll not be in the family business, or at least this business.
Yeah.
But I didn't know when that would happen, but I knew that the right time would come along to find the right marriage, and this was the perfect marriage for our
company. Tell me how that happens, Adam. I mean, someone has to ask someone else out on the first date, sort of, right? Did they pursue you, or did you identify them?
I approached them.
Did you?
I asked them out and decided, let's date a while. Let's create a partnership. I saw a lot of need for integration.
Was there the three-date rule? Did you follow all the rules?
We did follow the three-date rule. Or the Bronx Tale. I could do the Bronx Tale rule where they had to see if they opened the door for me or not, but that doesn't work anymore with modern technology.
So you approached them and you said, this might be a good fit.
This might be a good fit. And then for the past year and a half, prior to the acquisition, we had a good partnership where I think we had up to 700-800 combined customers that working together, and then they realized that it was something that made a lot of sense to make it one.
Okay, so the weird thing is you just said you're working for the company you created.
Yeah.
Right? So you are staying on there for how long?
Indefinitely. Yeah. I'm happy. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm enjoying the people I'm working with. I'm enjoying what we're building out. So until I stop enjoying that, there's no reason to leave.
But you were the boss.
Yeah.
And now you're going in there and taking orders.
Our management style and our management leadership team, there really was a by committee focus. I wasn't that, you know, command central.
You were the authoritarian.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it, the culture really.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. That was the hardest part for me personally, because I knew for the company it was the right decision. For me, you know, it was a good financial decision, but, you know, there's also the emotional thing of, you're not going to do it as well as I'm going to do it.
Right.
Because I'm the smartest guy in the world.
Well, we both know that's not the case. but it's also was you got to make those decisions and
yes.
You created it, so you got to hold the responsibility.
Yes.
Now other people have the responsibility.
Absolutely. I help shape some of that, but there's a difference between shaping and saying, people look around saying, all right, at the end of the day, it's your decision. What do you want to do?
So typically executives, when they do this, they stay with the new company for a period of time and then move on. Right.
Right.
Would you see yourself creating another business one day?
If and when the time presents itself and I have another idea, I wouldn't be opposed to it. But there's a part of me that would also potentially love to go back and get my teaching degree.
Oh, nice.
Teach high school history, which there's no classes today in Chicago. And then maybe coach baseball or something like that.
Well, that sounds like, because teaching is a lot like running a company.
It is.
That's good for you. I think I would. Let's do it together.
That'd be great.
We could share a classroom.
We could. That'd be awesome.
Adam Ochstein used to run a company called StratX, but it's toast. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, it is, but is it starting already? You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Okay, on the phone line now is Bill Abbott. He's the president and CEO of Crown Media Family Networks. Those are big words that really mean the Hallmark Channel and Hallmark movies. Bill, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, listen, I am so happy to talk to you because you have figured something out that I just don't understand. My daughter's out of the house now, but when she lived with us about this time of year, she and my wife would basically disappear for about 6 weeks and watch her TV channel.
Well, we hear that quite frequently from many people that we talk to. And, you know, we've really, we believe, created a tradition in people's lives that they love during the holidays. Holidays is just such a time for tradition, whether you get your tree at the same place or celebrate the season in a certain way with decorations or cooking or family and friends. And we really feel like we've become part of that tradition, and we're proud to do it.
It's the 10th year for this countdown to Christmas?
Yes, it will be.
Okay, and 24, and,
better than ever.
24 new movies this year, right? Is that typical?
So last year on Hallmark Channel, we did 22, okay. And we did 15 on Movies and Mysteries. This year, we're doing 24 on Channel and 16 on Movies and Mysteries.
Tell me about movie. I'm reluctant to ask because my wife might find that channel too. But what is Movies and Mysteries? I don't know that one.
So that's just a little bit more dramatic, okay. In tone. Hallmark Movies and Mysteries is our second channel that is also very highly rated and nearly fully distributed. But the tone for our Christmas movies are a little bit more dramatic, a little bit more in the DNA of Hallmark, which is the Hallmark Hall of Fame, which you may know. So that dramatic element that we really don't have as part of the romantic comedy that we have on Hallmark Channel is much more present in Movies and Mysteries.
Okay, so this is a business show, and I remember reading an article years ago about the Christmas movies in Hallmark, but this is your, like, just much like a retail outlet, this is a bread and butter time for you, right?
Yes, it is. We're the highest rated network in cable in fourth quarter with our holiday programming, so certainly almost like a retailer, we are very reliant on the holiday season. Certainly the week between Thanksgiving week and Black Friday and now Cyber Monday are big pieces of what we do. We're able to generate a lot of revenue from retailers and others who really focus on that time of the year. So it really aligns well for the business from the perspective of driving audience at the most important time of year for many advertisers.
Excellent point. So your time of greatest ratings is in many ways the time also of greatest advertising.
For sure, for sure.
Okay, so we've got that, and I also read then that Mother's Day is another big season for you. Is that correct? And I don't know about that. So do you ramp up with Mother's Day movies as well?
We do. We have our goal really is to celebrate and have the channel represent what it would be like to walk into a Hallmark Gold Crown store. So when you walk into the store during fall or during Valentine's Day or during Mother's Day, I think you get a certain feel.
Uh-huh.
We try and replicate that on our channel. So during Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, many other times of the year, we have content that really aligns well with what you would see in the retail store.
It's interesting. So, but you can put the content up. The audience has got to follow, and Mother's Day seems to be a time of year when people want to watch movies about moms.
Yeah, for sure. Just like Valentine's Day is a time that people like the romance and get into the spirit of the season. And that seasonal approach really helps us, too, on the business side from an advertiser point of view.
Yeah, that's what I said. Bill, you figured it out. You've got something pretty magical going here.
Where our business is extremely strong. Obviously, the overall business is undergoing a huge transition with SVOD services and over-the-top viewing, but our brand is so strong that we're very confident in the future.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question bluntly, and I mean no disrespect to it, but you know, these movies that you're producing and showing and millions of people are watching, they're not really Emmy material. I mean, they're not, I don't like them that much. They're not the best movies, and yet they're able to draw people remarkably. So tell me about the production of the films and how that pays off for you.
Well, you know, first of all, I think first and foremost, we offer just differentiated content. It's content that is family friendly. It's content that represents, I think, a positivity that is completely missing from not only the TV landscape, but certainly the Emmy conversation. So that's a big factor in our success. From a production point of view, we produce probably 75% of our content in Canada. It is done in a way that is cost efficient, certainly, but from the same point of view, we have made great strides in improving the quality of our casting, our production, our writing, really across the board with over the last 5 years, I would say.
Yeah.
We've taken great pains to ensure that the content is rising to a level that even you might enjoy some of the movies.
my daughter moved to L.A., so it's just my wife and I now, so maybe I'm going to have to share the couch with her and watch.
I'll give you some tips of ones that I think you would love.
You understand my question, right? I mean, no disrespect.
I do.
Yeah. Okay.
No, certainly. Yep.
So, and Netflix is trying to make a big play here, too. Are you challenged by Netflix and their glut of Christmas material, or is that not really a concern for you?
Well, I think all competition is a concern, but at the end of the day, we represent an experience that you can put the TV on and leave it on all day long and kind of come in and out and get a feel for the holiday season when you're watching us. Netflix is much more, and any SVOD platform is much more of just a one off type right. of you'll go there to watch a movie. You won't go and leave the service on all day.
Yeah, I
think there are many differences really in the way our presentation works and the way theirs is.
That's kind of interesting. So Netflix, you've got to hunt out and choose. With Hallmark, you've just got to turn on the TV.
Yes, correct.
All right, it all starts on Saturday. I wish you the very best, and I do appreciate you taking time to join us today, Bill Abbott, the president and CEO of Crown Media Networks, Family Networks. Okay, give me one title. What's the one I'm supposed to watch this year?
Well, Christmas Under the Stars is actually partially shot in Chicago, and it stars Jesse Metcalf and Autumn Reeser, and it is one that is certainly one of our best. That is November 18th, and I think you'd love it.
Merry Christmas, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Some people say it's rude to ask how much you make. I, on the other hand, think we should be talking more openly about personal finances to help each other out. But it's not rude if someone shares their tax releases to show how much they made. Haha, loophole. Governor Pritzker has done just that, and on last year's tax returns, he made $6 million and paid $216,000 in taxes. Now, don't get this wrong, he didn't make that much by having one job. When you get to the billionaire status, you have multiple streams of income. You know, just billionaire stuff. But that's basically another world I'm talking about. In this world, the Illinois transportation chief wants to warn drivers that it's deer mating season. Huh? Okay, listen. There were more than 15,000 deer vehicle crashes last year, and he wants drivers to remember a motto: don't veer for deer. Why? Because drivers are at a much higher risk of a severe crash if they veer. So stay alert for eye flashes on the side of the road and deer crossing signs wherever you travel. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, Steve Alexander. 12:52. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, A.D. Quigg from Crane Chicago Business joins us now from the Crane's newsroom to talk about marijuana in the city. A.D., welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you.
Okay, so the zoning committee met. Walk me through this. They met on Tuesday.
Tuesday for hours and hours and hours. It was one of the longest meetings I've ever sat through over there, and I've been there for 4 years.
I bet you've sat through some long meetings. They couldn't come to an agreement, right? So they came back on Wednesday.
Yeah, they came back Wednesday morning. So basically what happened Tuesday is the City Council Zoning Committee was set to meet to debate and discuss the new, basically the layout for where marijuana businesses can locate once recreational is legalized on January 1st. And we had zoning in the morning, all their regular business, and they took a little break and they came back. And aldermen on City Council's Black Caucus, which is 20 of the 50 members of City Council, had a lot of issues with the current version of the ordinance and just the program overall, and basically said, we're basically going to hold up the zoning until we can get our equity concerns addressed.
Well, but it eventually passed through the City Council, though.
That's right, and it was amended in a few ways that are, you know, a little wonky to talk about, but they basically give aldermen a lot more power over where any kind of cannabis business, so a craft grower, a dispensary, a retail store that maybe sells CBD or marijuana-infused items can locate. So
don't they call isn't that a different way of saying aldermanic prerogative?
One could say that, yeah. I mean, this is just the latest chapter in this ongoing battle between the mayor and aldermen over how much control they should have over what goes in their neighborhood.
So then tell me then about the idea that it's passed, it's going to happen, and yet this the Black Caucus now wants still to push it back to July rather than January.
Right. So the Black Caucus introduced an ordinance on Wednesday that would effectively ban sales in Chicago until July 1st. They argue that so there are 11 existing medical marijuana facilities in Chicago that on January 1st can basically flip a switch and turn over and sell recreational. And they're saying because they're mostly white owned, they're getting a leg up while people that are most criminalized by the war on drugs are still being locked out, that they basically have a massive head start in what is going to be very lucrative sales in Chicago. And they threatened to hold this up in zoning, eventually draft that.
Right.
But the kind of compromises
trying to force the city to wait until maybe some black-owned businesses can get off the ground.
We talked to some people from Growmentum, which is an incubator for minority businesses when it comes to the pot sales and things such as that. So I know they're out there helping, but are these minority businesses going to be ready to be up and running on January 1st?
Well, it's such a short timeline that I think it's going to be a struggle for any of these brand new companies to really be up and going. The only ones that are going to be ready, I think, on January 1st are these 11 existing medical. Right. They'll also get an additional 11 to open up, but then they'll be subject to these city zoning laws, which are kind of restrictive. And the mayor has done this in a way that bans sales from downtown, which is kind of an effort to force businesses to locate all over the city, not just in tourist-rich areas, as a way to create jobs citywide.
All right. The A.D. Quigg writes about that at Crane's Chicago Business. You can read that and more from her at chicagobusiness.com. AD, great to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Thank you.